All right. Good morning. We're continuing to plow through the books of the Bible. We're on Judges this week. I don't plan to do Ruth. Walter covered that last year. And even still, I tend to, for sake of cramming it into 52 weeks, I would just put it in with Judges anyway, because it's in the same time frame. So, if you're looking forward to next week being Ruth, I'm sorry, it's not. you can listen to Walter's good lesson on that, on our site, or study it for yourself. But, so we're up to the book of Judges, and we'll start with our timeline. I panicked that I didn't update that. But so we're right. We finally moved along the timeline. We spent the last several weeks parked around the time of Moses as we've been going through the Bible and just after it. And now we've actually moved along. So Judges takes place in that time between Moses and David, roughly, as far as major milestone people on our Bible timeline. If that helps you kind of get a sense of where this book takes place. Excuse me as I get some water. The book opens right after the death of Joshua. So it's right after the book of Joshua. And the timing of Judges may not be as obvious, but if you look at Ruth, the book of Ruth ends talking about how Ruth's, great-grandson, I believe, is David. And so you can see how it fits right in that time frame. So that's where we are. so again, if you're taking notes, as I force my kids to do, on the handouts in the lobby, or your own, we'll start with the summary. Walter read this for a scripture reading, which is that the book of Judges is kind enough to provide its own little summary. In chapter 2, verses about 11 through 19, and it's a cycle. We've talked about this before here many times, but there's a cycle, kind of a vicious cycle, where the people sin, going after false gods. And so the people of Israel sin in this way. And so God sends these foreign enemies to oppress them as a punishment. And then sometimes the people cry out, sometimes they don't, but God still delivers them from the enemy. It's after some period of time of oppression. And he does that by sending what's called a judge to deliver them in a military victory. Usually, or some sort of battle or something, not just like, you know, negotiations, but some sort of bloody battle. And then they do it all over again. And it's a cycle. that is the idea. I didn't know where to cram this in, but if you're not familiar with the idea of the Book of Judges, most of the judges are not what you think of when you think of judges. They are, you know, battle leaders. They are tribal leaders. The judges are not judges in a courtroom as we think of them. Or if they are, we sure don't read about it. The idea of the judges in the book of Judges is that they lead in battle. We're going to talk about an exception to that later on. she's not, but she is. Anyway. And the other point I wanted to make, just as way of introduction, we kind of talked about this last week with Joshua. There is, at this time of the book of Judges, there is not one single leader of Israel. So you read the story of Judges and you see that God raised up a judge and you think, oh, he's the king of Israel for that time or something. That's not likely to be accurate, okay? He is a judge probably over just a region of Israel, not all of Israel. and we see where the retelling of Joshua's death in Judges 2 and verse 8, and you don't see where a successor is appointed for him to lead all of Israel. That's not the intent. It's more of a decentralized kind of leadership, that the people would just follow God and not need a king. I'm going to add some nuance to that later, but for the time being, let's start with the idea that there were not single leaders over all of Israel. They were more regional. It helps, too, because scholars have noted if you add up all the timelines in Judges, it adds up to more time than it could possibly fit in the book of Judges, and that's because the timelines overlap, the stories overlap in time. So, okay, so why is the book of Judges special or unique? And it's just so messy. It is the opposite of a guidebook of what to do. It's almost the pinnacle guidebook in the Bible of what not to do. It is a terrible time in Israel's history. And when does it come after? It comes after one of the greatest times when Joshua was leading and they conquered the land, right? And then the time period after that, it's a mess. So there's heroes in the book of Judges, you know, of Samson, you know, of Gideon, and the men specifically, that are heroes in this book also have some really deep flaws. And they are not, to be emulated in every way. they're cited as people of faith in Hebrews 11, and it's good the things that they did in faith, but they also did some very bad things. and so, yeah, that's my next point. They do win the battles, but their personal, things that they do, can often be terrible. And the ending of the book is disturbing. This is like, you know, a movie that you would probably have PTSD from afterward, right? Like this is a really dark, disturbing ending of chapter 17 through 21. it's just such a dark period in their history. I don't see other books of the Bible being quite so dark and sad, but you know, it makes you think, well, okay, so maybe in the book of Judges they had a bad spell, and then after that everyone started being, you know, righteous again. That's unlikely. It seems that you know, throughout the time of the kings and things like that, there was still a lot of idolatry going on in the nation of Israel. It was just less pronounced, and the focus is more on the kings and not so much on the people. But these sins probably still persisted. You know, it was just that we don't have as many stories about them. But the main characters, there's a lot of judges in the book of Judges, or characters that don't seem to be named, as this is a judge, but that's what we tend to, you know, describe them as. Deborah, and that's the one we're going to talk about in our second half of this lesson. Obviously, she is a woman, and that is quite unique. And as a side note, the military leader in that story is Barak, but Deborah's kind of the star of the story. You've got Gideon. he was rather reluctant to take the lead. He's the one that saves the people with just 300 men, where they're winnowed down from thousands. And but then he does some sketchy things later, where he, you know, hires out a priest and seems very, you know, self-centered. Samson, he's the toughest one, right? He's the coolest. He's strong. You know, he beats everybody up with the weirdest of things, with like the jaw of a donkey, and ties the foxes together. People debate the rendering of that, but he's you know, he's the coolest sounding character, and he's got so many flaws. He has relations with the prostitute, Delilah, I think is if I'm not mixing and matching the characters. And then he does these things where, you know, he touches the dead body and eats the honey out of it. And there's just so many laws of Moses that he breaks. And you know, so there's many flaws there. Jephthah, generally, you know, seems like he does a good job, but then he has this weird vow and it ends up, that he didn't have to make and leads to his daughter's death. So just, yeah, very mixed bag of good and bad with these people. all right. So our outline, the judges, the stories of the judges of the action scenes, of deliverance and everything is chapters 3 through 16. So before that, you get the introduction, just kind of telling the background leading up to this point, how Israel did not finish conquering Canaan. So even though Joshua led the people and did a very good job, they didn't quite finish driving all the unbelieving people out of the land. And that causes a problem for them in the book of Judges. And so then we get to what we talked about, where Joshua dies and the Lord raised up judges, is the phrase. and then there's that end chapters of, that end section of chapter 17 to 21. And there's all sorts of things. There's rape. There's what I would call human trafficking, where they, capture the women to find wives for the men of Benjamin, because what happened, there? Well, there was a genocide and they went and killed thousands of people. I think it's thousands, from the tribe of Benjamin. And so it's just one bad decision after another. and the repeated phrase, in the book, in that section of the book is, in those days, there was no king in Israel. And it's four times in chapter 17, 18, 19, and 21, including the very last sentence of the book, is that phrase. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And if you are of a modern libertarian persuasion and that sounds good to you, in the Bible context, this is a bad thing that everyone did what was right in their own eyes. They should have been doing what was right in God's eyes. the theology and doctrine section, I'm kind of just expanding on that idea. I think we've kind of covered that there was this refrain that there was no king in Israel. so that kind of leads you to the question, wasn't that right? There shouldn't be a king in Israel, right? That wasn't really the goal. You know, did Israel need a king? If you think of the story in 1 Samuel, that I think we're all very familiar with, where, the people demand a king, and, Samuel is very upset about this, and he goes to God, and God says, you know, don't be so upset. They've rejected me. God is saying they've rejected me as king. And, and so, you know, why is the book of Judges kind of lamenting the idea that there was no king in Israel? So, I mean, one, you could take this in a spiritual sense. God was not their king. He should have been, but they didn't look at it that way by their actions. but I would say that the Bible kind of makes the case that a perfectly good second best to this is if you have one or many godly leaders, rather than just some utopia of leaderless society where everyone just does what's right. That's unlikely to happen, right? So you need some kind of leadership, and it would be good if they had godly leaders, even to the extent of a godly king. But what they had was none of that. They didn't have good regional leaders. They didn't have a good central leader, and they were not individually doing what was right either. They just had chaos. and then if you're like me, you often think, where are the priests? I thought that often when we've studied 1 Samuel as well, you know, in the days of David and everything. And where are the priests, right? So if you look, I looked up to see, you know, where the word priest and priests might be mentioned in Judges, and it's only in chapter 17 and 18. And it's not because they said, let's go to the priests and learn what's the right thing to do. It's because they went and made their own priests out of people that shouldn't have the right to be priests, because they weren't of the right lineage, and and then they do some terrible things as well. So nothing's going right. So they kind of did need a king, but they shouldn't have needed a king. So how about that? So that's our tour through the book. And I'll do the recap if you're taking notes. So we've got our cycle of you know, many generations of people sinning, generational cycles of sin, and then enemy invasion, and then deliverance from the judges, and then going back to sin again. So just generation after generation is going through these cycles. It is special in a dubious distinction because it is a very messy book highlighting the just aimlessness of the people. Some of the main characters, and there are many, is Deborah, Gideon, Samson, and Jephthah. And then we talked about the outline, how the main section is 3 through 16 of the Judges, which leaves the beginning of chapters 1 and 2 for the introduction, and then that disturbing section at the end of 17 through 21. So we'll leave it there, and then we'll spend the most of our time talking about Deborah. And she is, of course, the only known female judge. And so for a summary, I really struggled. I try to boil the summary down to about a sentence, just to make it easier to take notes. And I have a tough time with this, because on the one hand, it's an ordinary story in the book of Judges that follows the pattern, that, you know, there was sin in the land and, foreign oppression, and then a judge was raised up to deliver them, and there was a battle, and then, you know, and then there's peace, victory and peace, right? So it fits the pattern, and yet, every single detail of this, or most of the details, actually seem to go completely against type, right? So the judge that's raised up is a woman. Secondly, as a side point to that, that judge, that woman, Deborah, does what's right. She doesn't seem to have a lot of flaws or any flaws in the story, unlike the male judges, which often, you know, do some terrible things on the side. Then there's a battle, which fits the type, but the battle's not really fought by her. She's persuaded to go, but she wasn't planning to. She asks a different person, a man, to command the battle. So that's unusual. That's outside the mold of the other stories. And then there's this really wild ending of a woman named, let's say, Jael, that just seems to be some random civilian character, not involved in the battle, not a judge, not, you know, just only, it's kind of questionable whether she's an Israelite or not. And she's the one that kills the enemy commander, which is kind of the picture there. So really, really unusual deviations from the standard pattern of the stories in the book of Judges. So, yeah, try to fit all that in your notes. Taking notes. I don't know how to boil that down to a sentence. But so why is this story special? And it sticks out like a sore thumb because what seems to be the best leader in this book is a woman. So she's, I guess you can kind of split those into two things, right? She's a good leader, which is surprising, and she's a woman, which is unique in the book also. I don't see of any other female judges. when she, you know, asks Bayrak to lead the battle, she doesn't want the glory. She wants him to have the glory. So she's humble in this way. When she goes into battle, she doesn't even lead the battle. She's just there to say, all right, go ahead now. Go fight. And then what's even more surprising, she actually does some judging in the sense that we think of it. I should have put a reference there. I think I might have it in one of the other slides. But it's in her, introduction. And we'll read the story later anyway. But, you know, they come to her, and that's kind of what I've tried to picture here. They come to her for advice. So she's not out there forcing it on them, but they know that she's wise. She's actually considered a prophetess. So she's judging, right? She's giving judgments on matters that they're asking her about, which really kind of lines up with what we think of and what the precedent is from, that scene of Moses and Jethro. I'll come back to that, but, everything about her just stands out, and that's what makes this so unique in the book. So our main character is, of course, Deborah, the judge, and she's there in the fight, but reluctantly, really almost for his sake. You got Bayrak, and if you're like me, it is very difficult to keep straight and not say Balak, who's in the story with Balaam, and Bayrak, who is in this story. So this is Bayrak, completely different person. And then you've got Sisera, who is the commander of the enemies. And then you've got... I've always heard it as Jael. I think you would probably pronounce it Jael, but if you say that real fast, it sounds the same. She's that woman who kills Sisera, the enemy commander. All right, so I'll put the outline up, and we'll go ahead and turn to Judges chapter 4 and read the story. And I'll turn myself there. All right, so Judges chapter 4. It's the whole chapter. And the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. When Ehud was dead, he was the former judge that delivered them the last time, more or less. verse 2, and the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, that reigned in Hazor, the captain of whose host was Sisera, which dwelt in Harosheth of the Gentiles. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, for he had 900 chariots of iron, and 20 years he mightily oppressed the children of Israel. So, you know, everything, very bad picture. They're doing terribly, right? Verse 4, and Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, she judged Israel at that time. And she dwelt under the palm tree of Deborah, between Ramah and Bethel in Mount Ephraim. And the children of Israel came up to her for judgment. And she sent and called Bayrak, the son of Abinoam, out of Kadesh Naphtali, and said unto him, hath not the Lord God of Israel commanded, saying, go and draw toward Mount Tabor, and take with thee 10,000 men of the children of Naphtali, and of the children of Zebulun, and I will draw unto thee to the river... a lot of prepositions. I will draw unto thee to the river Kishon Sisera, the captain of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his multitude, and I will deliver him into thine hand. So it seems that she's already received some sort of prophecy that you know, he should just go and do this, and you know, maybe that he was the chosen one, and you know, that he'll win in this victory. But that seems to not be enough for him. So verse 8, and Bayrak said unto her, if thou wilt go with me, then I will go. But if thou wilt not go with me, then I will not go. And she said, I will surely go with thee, notwithstanding the journey that thou takest shall not be for thine honor, for the Lord shall sell Sisera into the hand of a woman. And Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. Verse 10, and Barak called Zebulun and Naphtali to Kadesh. So these are tribes. If you're not up on the geography, these are some of the tribes, or if you want to think of them as like states, in Israel, Zebulun and Naphtali. So he's gathering, you know, a couple national guards, if you will, you know, to come help him. It may be a way to think of it. To Kadesh, verse 10, and he went up with 10,000 men at his feet, and Deborah went up with him. Now, Heber the Kenite, this seems like a wild side note that has nothing to do with anything, but it's kind of foreshadow about where Jael comes from. So just so you know. Verse 11, now Heber the Kenite, which was of the children of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, had severed himself from the Kenites and pitched his tent under the plain of Zaanaim, which is by Kadesh. So a lot of names in there, but just know that, you know, Moses married a Midianite, and the Midianites were enemies that oppressed people in the book of Judges. But it seems like this man kind of seceded from them. And is actually somehow in, you know, related by marriage to Moses, who's long dead at this point, right? But just kind of keep in mind, he's sort of, you know, kind of knows the enemies, but he's also not with them anymore. And that, like I said, this comes into play later when we get to the part about Jael. Okay, verse 12, and they showed Sisera that Barak, the son of Abinoam, was gone up to Mount Tabor. And Sisera gathered together all of his chariots, even 900 chariots of iron, and all the people that were with him from Harosheth of the Gentiles unto the river of Kishon. So they're about to do battle. Verse 14, and Deborah said unto Barak, up, for this is the day in which the Lord hath delivered Sisera into thine hand. Is not the Lord gone out before thee? So Barak went down from Mount Tabor, and 10,000 men after him, and the Lord discomfited Sisera, put them in a riot, I think is what other translations will say, and all his chariots and all his host with the edge of the sword before Barak, so that Sisera lighted down off his chariot and fled away on his feet. So he's a coward and runs away. Verse 16, but Barak pursued after the chariots and after the host, unto Harosheth of the Gentiles, and all the host of Sisera fell upon the edge of the sword, and there was not a man left. Howbeit Sisera fled away on his feet to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, for there was peace between Jabin, the king of Hazor, and the house of Heber the Kenite. So, you kind of get the hint there in verse 17 that, he seems to be sort of maybe he's a neutral party, you know, this, Heber the Kenite, but his wife, we'll find out, has no problem killing the enemy commander. Verse 18, and Jael went out to meet Sisera and said unto him, turn in, my lord, turn into me, fear not. Just come in here, be safe, it's all right. and when he had turned into her, into the tent, she covered him with a mantle or a rug. Verse 19, and he said unto her, give me, I pray thee, a little water to drink, for I am thirsty. And she opened a bottle of milk and gave him drink and covered him. I don't know if it's warm milk, but you just think about how, you know, you give someone like a, you know, a kid warm milk and they fall asleep, right? I don't know if that's a play here, but anyway, verse 20, and he said unto her, stand in the door of the tent, and it shall be when any man doth come and inquire of thee and say, is there any man there, that thou shalt say no. So in other words, cover me, right? Don't tell anyone I'm here. Verse 21, then Jael, Heber's wife, took a nail of the tent and took a hammer in her hand and went softly unto him, and smote the nail into his temples and fastened it to the ground, for he was fast asleep and weary, so he died. And behold, as Barak pursued Sisera, Jael came out to meet him and said unto him, come, and I will show thee the man whom thou seekest. And when he came into her tent, behold, Sisera lay dead, and the nail was in his temples. Now, verse 23, so God subdued on that day Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the children of Israel. So we're kind of picking kind of a separate side story, right? So the king hasn't really been in the picture here, but it's just saying, you know, after this battle, they go and hunt down the king. Verse 24, and the hand of the children of Israel prospered and prevailed against Jabin, the king of Canaan, until they had destroyed Jabin, king of Canaan. All right, so that's our story. So something that is pretty interesting. There are details in this story that we don't read that actually come up in the next chapter, which the next chapter is a poem. And like I say, we'll read the whole thing. Verse 1 of chapter 5, then sang Deborah and Barak, son of Abinoam, on that day, saying, and then there's their poem or song. So it's some kind of song that was, you know, remembered among the people. But there's actually some additional details in this poem. If you're like me, you know, you're reading this and you're like, okay, Deborah says to Barak, go out in battle. You know, the Lord will deliver you. And he does go out, and the Lord does deliver him. And like, okay, I was expecting a miracle. That's usually how these go. So did he just have a good day and defeated the other army? And in chapter 5, you get some hints that there was some providence at play. In verses 4 and 5, you've got this mention of how the Lord, you know, went out and the earth trembled, the heavens dropped, the clouds also dropped water, the mountains melted before the Lord. And then verse 21 of chapter 5, it talks about the river of Kishon swept them away, that ancient river, the river Kishon. There is more that seems to be going on here. It's not just a battle, which is all you really get the hint of, unless I missed something in chapter 4. And then another thing you see in chapter 5, so in chapter 4, there's just that brief mention, as I was trying to point out, as we read that, you know, that two tribes sent their, you know, their troops, to help in this battle. But there's more than two tribes in Israel. And so you get a lot more detailed. There's additional tribes that helped and additional tribes that just stayed at home. And, you know, is it the duty of all of Israel to come and fight every battle in every location? I would think no, but they're kind of shamed in this poem for not coming to help. So, we'll come back and read that. The big looming question in all of this, was it wrong for a woman to be the leader in this time of Israel? Well, the text certainly never says that it was wrong. And what's really jarring is that no one mentions it, right? No one seems to like notice or be bothered or find it unusual that there's a woman who's a judge, you know, giving advice and everything and out there in the battle. It's just stated as a fact. Then you look at Deborah and, you know, like I say, she's portrayed in a very positive light. She has a very good reputation. Like I said, people came to her in chapter 4, verse 5. So they willingly wanted her good advice. She's also described as a prophetess. So there seems to be a divine blessing and communication there. You know, when Deborah tells Barak, go fight this battle, he's not like, who are you to tell me what to do? He's like, I don't want to. Can you come with? You know, so there's no objection there. It just seems to be understood that that's like normal, that Deborah would just like tell some army commander, why don't you go fight these people? as I mentioned earlier, if you think of the story, I'll go ahead and read these two verses. It's a much longer passage, but Exodus 18 is this story where Moses is doing too much. He's early days of after they've escaped Egypt. Everyone's coming to him with questions because they're like, so you gave us this new law. Can you fill in some of the details? You know, and so his father-in-law says, why don't you delegate a little bit, right? And appoint some people to judge. So Exodus 18, 21 to 22, his advice to Moses, moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men. And I don't know if that's just a translation thing, but, it could just mean, I'm assuming it could mean people generally, but able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetous, so good people, right? And place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds and rulers of fifties and rulers of tens, and let them judge the people at all seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, every great matter, so really difficult questions, go ahead and still bring those to Moses. But every small matter, they, the smaller rulers, shall judge. So it shall be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. So it's thought that this is kind of the precedent for the idea of the judges as leaders and people who judge. Anyway, she does kind of fit that idea, you know, that she was actually doing some judging. And not necessarily just out there to kill people. So that's Deborah. And then another consideration, you know, as we think about whether it was right or wrong for her to be a leader in Israel, do keep in mind that the book of Judges, I probably should have made a bigger point of this. The book of Judges just states a lot of things as facts and doesn't say that was wrong that he did that. You know, it doesn't always give you the moral clarity of those things. You know, just say, here's what happened. And, so, you know, we don't know outright whether, from that, whether, you know, Deborah was approved or not, but, one, considering she's a prophetess, that's probably, you know, it seems a stamp of approval. And then two, there's a whole poem about her, right? I don't think people who are deceptive and misguided and doing the wrong things get a poem praising them for what they did. So that I would say she does seem to be completely on the right side of things and approved in these ways. That's my pardon the pun, judgment on that. But you know, be something to consider and you know, be interested to talk about that later, but. But what we can't conclude from all of this, is that, oh, well, there was a female judge, therefore we can have women leaders in the church, right? Women pastors and elders and things like that. There's no line between those two statements. New Testament scriptures have plenty to say, on that, and there's no justification for that, and I'll leave that alone. But, all right, so our recap, again, if you're taking notes. I tried to put it into a sentence. So it's a story about a judge, but it breaks the mold. And it's special because, arguably the best leader, in the book of Judges is a woman. That stands out quite a bit. You've got Deborah, Barak, Sisera, and Jael, as the main characters. Won't go over the outline. But just keep in mind that chapter 5 will add some details that are not there in chapter 4. I'm not saying that it's wrong that they're not there in chapter 4, but just there's additional information that seems to be there in chapter 5. And then we talked about whether it was right or not for a woman to lead them. So with that, we'll go ahead and read chapter 5 of Judges, which is this poem. And again, it's just a retelling of some, but not all, of the events of chapter 4, and in a poetic way. And it really takes some time to dwell on the idea of what tribes were supporting this effort and which ones are not. all right, so Book of Judges, chapter 5. Then sang Deborah and Barak, the son of Abinoam, on that day, saying, praise ye the Lord for the avenging of Israel, when the people willingly offered themselves. Hear, O ye kings, give ear, O ye princes. I, even I, will sing unto the Lord. I will sing praise to the Lord God of Israel. Lord, when thou wentest out of Seir, when thou marchest out of the field of Edom, the earth trembled, and the heavens dropped, and the clouds also dropped water. The mountains melted from before the Lord, even that Sinai, from before the Lord God of Israel. In the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were unoccupied, and the travelers walked through byways, so it was a bad time. Verse 7, the inhabitants of the villages ceased, they ceased in Israel, until that I, Deborah, arose, that I arose a mother in Israel. They chose new gods, then was there war in the gates, was there a shield or a spear seen among 40,000 in Israel. My heart is toward the governors of Israel that offered themselves willingly among the people. Bless ye the Lord. Speak, ye that ride on white donkeys, ye that sit in judgment and walk by the way. They that are delivered from the noise of archers in the places of drawing water, there shall they rehearse the righteous acts of the Lord, even the righteous acts toward the inhabitants of his villages in Israel. Then shall the people of the Lord go down to the gates. Awake, awake, Deborah. Awake, awake, utter a song. Arise, Barak, and lead thy captivity captive, thou son of Abinoam. Then he made him that remaineth have dominion over the nobles among the people. The Lord made me have dominion over the mighty. Verse 14. Out of Ephraim was there a root of them. Out of Ephraim was there a root of them against Amalek. After thee, Benjamin, among thy people, out of Machir came down governors, and out of Zebulun, they that handle the pen of the writer. And the princes of Issachar were with Deborah, even Issachar, and also Barak, for he was sent on foot into the valley. For the divisions of Reuben, there were great thoughts of heart. Why abodest thou? So this is kind of the split, I think, in verse 15. I didn't split it on the slide, but I think in the middle of 15 is where you kind of get the split, where first you're reading the tribes that supported, and now you're going to read the ones that kind of chickened out. Verse 16, why abodest thou among the sheepfolds to hear the bleatings of the flocks? For the divisions of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. Gilead abode beyond Jordan, and why did Dan remain in ships? Asher continued on the seashore and abode in his breeches. So they're just kind of staying at home, right? And then back to the good ones, verse 18. Zebulun and Naphtali were people that jeoparded their lives unto the death in the high places of the field. The kings came and fought, then fought the kings of Canaan and Taanach by the waters of Megiddo. They took no gain of money. They fought again. They fought from heaven. The stars in their courses fought against Sisera. So again, there's something divine going on there. Verse 21, the river Kishon of Kishon swept them away, that ancient river, the river Kishon, O my soul, thou hast trodden down strength. Then were the horse hoofs broken by the means of the prancings of their mighty ones. Curse ye, Meraz, said the angel of the Lord, just out of nowhere. Curse ye bitterly the inhabitants thereof, because they came not to help to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the mighty. Verse 24, let me switch to Jael. Blessed above women shall Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, be. Blessed shall she be above women in the tent. He asked water, and she gave him milk. She brought forth butter in a lordly dish. She put her hand to the nail and her right hand to the workman's hammer. And with the hammer she smote Sisera. She smote off his head when she had pierced and stricken through his temples. At her feet he bowed, he fell, he lay down. At her feet he bowed, he fell. Where he bowed, there he fell down dead. Verse 28, the mother of Sisera looked out, and this is kind of sad, looked out at a window and cried through the lattice, why is his chariot so long in coming? Why tarry the wheels of his chariots? So it's, even though he's the enemy, you kind of get this sympathy for the mom that's like, I think he didn't make it. Verse 29, her wise ladies answered her, yea, she returned answer to herself. Have they not sped? Have they not divided the prey, to every man a damsel or two, to Sisera a prey of divers colors, a prey of divers colors, of needlework of divers colors, of needlework on both sides, meat for the necks of them that take the spoil. So, here's the conclusion, let all thine enemies perish, O Lord, but let them that love him be as the sun when he goeth forth in his might, and the land had rest 40 years. So kind of an actual, like, you know, prose ending there that, you know, this is the success of it, that the land had rest. So we'll stop there. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I forget all the details that are in that story of Deborah, and how, just how layered it is. We take this time to offer an invitation, for those that are here, for those that, are living in a world of sin and following after false gods, the Lord calls us to come out and be separate from that, just as it may have been very difficult for people in the time of Judges to be living in that time of sin all around them. So if there's any that do wish to answer the call of the gospel, to commit your life to God and be saved by the blood of Jesus, or any that just wish for the prayers of the saints, you can come forward as we stand and sing the song of invitation.